But there was something scarce in the way that I was saying it, in calling myself an acquired taste. There was also this undertone of me saying that it was going to be hard for someone to love me, that it was going to be hard for me to find someone to love me. I'm an acquired taste. And I had accepted this about myself. And I had this moment where I sat back and I was like, okay, why?
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. I'm going to a song party tonight and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly slumber party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, inventor of sleepovers, keeper of secrets. When you're here, you're family. Isn't that what they say? Today, I'm coming at you live from my bed. We're switching up the film and location because my patrons told me to, and I do whatever they tell me to. Gone to my head. Patrons could tell me to do literally anything and I would do it. And someone on the Patreon suggested that I shoot the show from my bed because I was complaining about sitting crisscross and my knees were hurting because I'm 80 years old. So here we are in my bed. I'm still sitting crisscross, but I do have the opportunity and option to spread my legs out and be full starfish on the pod, which could be huge for the sleepover culture. So here we are doing a little switch up of the location. Who knows? Maybe I'll be here every now and then, switch from the bed to the couch. You know, sometimes the vibes are different. Sometimes you're having a really intimate sleepover and you guys are in the same bed together as we are right now. And other times it's more, you know, heads in a slumber bag circle in the living room. We've talked about this. We've discussed all the various ways that we exist together here in the Emotionally Online Cinematic Universe. Today, we're in bed together. So I'm hoping you feel particularly close to me for today's episode. But I've been dying to get on this mic since last Friday because last Friday, for the first time ever, never done this before, I went to a psychic. I had my first psychic reading. I always said that I would never seek out a psychic, that if I was going to go to a psychic, it was going to happen upon me. Somebody was going to recommend me a psychic. It was going to, you know, come to me more organically. I wasn't going to go out of my way to try to find myself a reputable psychic. I was going to go off word of mouth only. And lucky enough, I was recommended a psychic by my friend Sam on the Greece trip. So I got home from the trip, I booked myself a little meeting, I did it a couple weeks in advance so I had time to like really sit and simmer and just prepare myself mentally for my first psychic encounter. Ooh. I actually vlogged my entire experience seeing the psychic, the before, during, and after, the analysis, the unpacking, the reflection. So if you're interested in that, that is live over on my Patreon. So feel free to join us at Lover Girls HQ if you want to know all of the juicy details. But I'll give you the high level. I'll give you the high level, my favorite parts, some key takeaways from seeing this psychic. First of all, it was interesting because, and I didn't expect this, and maybe I should have, but right when we got on the call, we jumped into talking about family stuff. And that ended up being what we talked about for a large majority of the call, which I guess in hindsight, I should have expected because she's speaking to your ancestors, your guides, people that were in your family that you knew that have passed on, or people in your family that you've never met that have been protectors for you. She is speaking to them. So it makes sense that the conversation would immediately go to family stuff. But family wasn't even, I guess it just is not something that I thought much about in terms of like stuff I was curious about going into speaking to the psychic. Obviously, I'm more curious about my love life, my career, my like future as it pertains to like the stuff in my daily life. I don't live with my family anymore. We live in totally different places. So like most of my day-to-day life is not me necessarily thinking about my family since I live a more independent life. Obviously I'm very intertwined with my family members. We talk all the time, going to visit them in like a week, which is going to be so fun to see them. But it's not like I'm living at home and family is like a constant part of my day-to-day life. you know, it just, it's different than it is when you're a kid and you're living under the same roof and, you know, family looks one way and then you get older and it shifts and it changes and, you know, whatever. Just wasn't at the top of my brain, but we ended up talking so much about family. We talked a lot about like generational traumas and patterns and being a cycle breaker for my family. And she said that for that reason, I am supposed to get married and have kids and that I was going to have two sons, which is a little shocking because I do not plan on having children. But, and here's what I'll say, I'm joking, we're hee-heeing, we're ha-haing, but my general philosophy on psychics, obviously some people are full of shit, like Pauline, the scammer up in Maine, that she's just like a grade A grifter. Pauline is full of shit. She has no connection to the afterlife. She's speaking to no one, okay? She is making shit up. Some people are like that. But I do believe in psychics. I buy into the whole thing. But I believe that it's like, psychics are communicating with your guides on the other side, and they're also like interpreting. So they can misinterpret. I think psychics can get things wrong, and it doesn't make them illegitimate or totally nulls out any of the other things they said that they did get correct. So I think that maybe it's less about me being a mother and more about me being a motherly figure or like a prominent female figure in some child's life. Two young boys. So maybe my sister's kids, my brother's kids, some of my best friend's children. I don't know. Somebody also suggested that maybe it was two boy cats. I would prefer to believe that this is talking about human children that I could impart knowledge and wisdom on. I have said so often that I am so excited to be an aunt someday. I'm going to be so fucking involved. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy. It's not going to be like, you know, I see you around holidays type of family member. No, no. We are going to be locked the fuck in. Me and my nieces and nephews, whether by blood or by bestie dumb. Okay. I will be locked the fuck in whoever those kids are. So we'll see if I end up being a mother or not. This whole thing is going to be extremely well documented. But I thought what she was saying about me being a cycle breaker and getting to do things differently for my family, in many ways is already true. And, you know, sparing you all the details because we are talking about my family and I'm not trying to put these people that I love on blast. But even looking at like me being the first person in my family to go to therapy and seek out any kind of mental health treatment. Not because I'm the only one who needs it, but because I'm just the first one who has. And it's not like this was something that was encouraged to me growing up. This is not something that my parents helped me seek out. This is something that I did entirely on my own. And it's something that has become like a major part of my life that now I'm going back and I'm encouraging my siblings to go and do this and that, my parents, and we're trying to get everyone more involved in taking care of their mental health. I think I'm also the most emotional person in my family. I'm definitely the most sensitive. And I'm also the most open. So even in like, you know, more emotional ways, I think that I am someone who shows up differently than was modeled for me growing up. I've talked so much about body image stuff and how that impacted me as a kid, but obviously that's very connected to mental health as well. Like even to this point in my life, I have been moving differently than was modeled for me as a child. I've been trying to do life differently, to take care of myself in a different way, to reparent myself where I need to, and also to like bring my family along with me on that journey, right? We're all living life for the first time. There's always more to learn, always more to do. But I do think that I have a unique comfort when it comes to more sensitive and emotional topics. I do have a strength in this regard, and I do believe that it has been allowing me to move differently and allowing me to be a cycle breaker in my family in this way and in so many more ways that I'll never talk about on the internet. It was also interesting because the advice that was given to me by my guides was also the same advice that I have been sitting with and giving myself recently. That was like my big takeaway at the end of it all, was that, I mean, I left the whole experience feeling fantastic. I didn't necessarily hear anything that I didn't already know, but I was directly affirmed about things that I was already thinking and feeling, which was kind of beautiful. And it was, I mean, it was all spot on. The fact that it was stuff that I had already been thinking about myself, bits of advice that feel really relevant for me right now. There was nothing that was said to me that I was like, I have no idea what that's about or what that's connected to. It was literally like bar for bar advice that I had given myself recently, which was bananas. Advice about dating, advice about the way that I speak to myself, which was crazy because in my last YouTube video, when I was sitting doing my makeup, right before I went on the psychic call, I was literally doing my makeup for this fucking psychic call. I was trying to look sexy for her. I was doing my makeup and I was sitting there talking about, well, this is like such a longer conversation. Should we just get into it right now? I have this written for later on in the episode, but fuck it. Let's just get into it right now. I was having a conversation with my therapist about calling myself emotionally intense, or rather I called myself emotionally intense during one of my therapy calls. And my therapist was like, why do you keep referring to yourself like that? Why do you keep calling yourself emotionally intense? Is that something that you actually believe about yourself? And I was like, well, yes and no. Yes, in the sense that this is something that I feel like I've been told a lot. I was always told that I was overly emotional, that I was too much, that I was high maintenance, that I was all these things. I've always just been like described as being a more emotionally intense person by other people. But if you asked me if I think that I'm emotionally intense, my answer would be no. I just think that I'm someone who is more comfortable being vulnerable than the average person is. And I also think that I am interested in having a certain level of depth in my relationships that some people just aren't. I don't think that that makes me emotionally intense. I just think this is like a fundamental difference between me and some other people. But I think that sometimes I will refer to myself as emotionally intense, not because that's what I believe, but because that feels like the nicer thing to say. It does feel mean to be like, oh, well, you just don't have enough depth for me, versus me saying, well, I'm so intense. I just want something that is so, so too much and intense. And it's me, you know, I'm the one that's doing the most, versus looking at someone else and being like, actually, it's not that I'm emotionally intense. You just don't have enough depth for me, which sometimes feels mean, but it's the God honest truth sometimes. And that's not even meant to be shade. You're allowed to be different from other people and to want different things, to believe different things, to move through life differently. That's fine. It doesn't even have to be shade. But sometimes it feels like shade to me, because being open and vulnerable and having these like really like soul tie connections and relationships with people feel so paramount to me and so important. It's like, I either want that or I want nothing. And that's kind of how I've always been. I have no interest in like surface level relationships, or people that I don't have that kind of rapport with, if you will. So then I had this moment in therapy where I'm realizing that I am saying something that is kind of unkind to myself, that is also not a true reflection of how I feel about the matter, just because I want to make other people more comfortable, or it seems nicer to just, you know, be self-deprecating and put it on myself rather than to say how I actually feel and have like a harsher opinion, if you will. And then I was thinking, like, in how many other corners of my life is this true? Like, how many other times have I done this where I have spoken about myself in a way that maybe has impacted me on a subconscious level? Because even if I don't believe that I'm emotionally intense, obviously I've struggled with too muchness my whole life. This is something that has been a recurring insecurity or fear of mine. And that, you know, goes all the way back to childhood with being the more emotional kid, being the sensitive one, being the high maintenance one, being the one that was always spoken to like that. It's no wonder that as an adult in dating and relationships, the thing that I've struggled with the most is feeling like, you know, this is a part of me that is unlovable, or that it is, you know, too much or too intense or whatever it is. And I'm like, how many other ways have I, even if it's not what I personally believe, how often have I taken the thoughts and opinions and feelings of other people and just spoken about myself in a way that aligns with that image and that story, as opposed to what I believe and know to be true as someone who lives in my body and experiences myself every single day of my life? And so I'm sitting and thinking, and, you know, similarly to this, going off the too much path a little bit farther, I have often referred to myself as being an acquired taste. And this is something that comes from an insecurity that I had when I was younger. It goes back to being a teenager and feeling like I was unlovable, or fearing that I wasn't, you know, pretty enough or thin enough or whatever enough to be loved. Thinking there was something wrong with me, and that, you know, it was going to take a really special person to want to be with me. And you can, you know, say that phrase in 100 different ways to make it sound a little bit nicer than what I just said, right? I mean, it will to anybody, right? You got to find the right person for you. It will be a special person who wants to be with me. But there was something scarce in the way that I was saying it, in calling myself an acquired taste. There was also this undertone of me saying that it was going to be hard for someone to love me, that it was going to be hard for me to find someone to love me. I'm an acquired taste. And I can sit here and be like, well, I think that it's awesome. I think that the taste palette that I'm catering to is highbrow. Okay. But there's a lot of people that I'm just not going to be for. I'm too much. I'm too emotional. I'm too this. I'm too that. I'm an acquired taste. And I had accepted this about myself. And I had this moment where I sat back and I was like, okay, why? Why have I accepted this about myself? Why am I talking about myself in this way? It's not helpful. It's just kind of mean. And it reinforces this belief that I am hard to love in some way, you know, based on societal expectations of beauty, or, you know, to be honest, just like sexist assessments on emotional women and me being too much. Ultimately, these are things like deeply rooted in patriarchal norms and images of what a woman should or shouldn't be, or what a woman's like typical downfalls are. But I've thought about it a lot within the context of like me going out and flirting with someone IRL, because that's something that we've been talking about a little bit, talked about it last week on the Patreon app, if you're interested in hearing more about that. But a previous version of myself never would have gone out and just flirted for love of the game, not because I needed to be desired or needed things to be reciprocated or needed to make out or go home with someone or anything. I would have never gone out and flirted just for love of the game and to be my charismatic, sexy, flirty self. I never would have done that, because I believed that I was an acquired taste, and I don't know, everything felt more serious. I was like, well, I don't want to do that, because what if they're just not into big girls? What if they just don't like women like me? I don't want to, you know, be this version of myself. I don't want to be flirty. I don't want to be too charismatic. I don't want to be too whatever, in case they just like, you know, don't want anything to do with me. And so then I'm like suppressing a part of myself out of fear of what someone may or may not say about me. And at the end of the day, it's like, I actually don't care. I'm not flirting so that you desire me. I'm not flirting so that you have any kind of reaction to me. I'm flirting because that's who I am, and because it makes me feel hot and sexy and confident to just kind of lean in and be social and bop around to different people, and, you know, whatever it is that I want to do that night that I'm feeling in my bones is good and fun and whatever. Like, I don't want to think about it that much. But it was like this, the way that I was speaking to myself in calling myself an acquired taste, in calling myself emotionally intense, and worrying so much about if I was someone's type or not, I had subconsciously, even if I didn't believe this, told myself that I was so difficult to love that I shouldn't even be open, that I shouldn't even be my true, confident, flirty, sexy self just for love of the fucking game, because what about what all these other people may think of me? And it's interesting because even a couple months ago, if you had brought this conversation up with me, I would have told you that both of those things were not self-deprecating. I would have told you that me referring to myself as emotionally intense was just true. I am emotionally intense. I want something that is very invested and vulnerable and open and honest. And you know what? That is intensity to a lot of people. So fine, fuck it. I'm intense. And that's exactly how I would have spoken to you about it without even acknowledging that, like, the word intense is not necessarily one that has the most positive connotations. And what I'm saying is not that I'm emotionally intense. I'm just saying that I look for depth, that I want to be within partnerships, relationships, friendships that have a certain amount of depth and openness and closeness. And if that isn't there, then I'm less interested. To me, that kind of depth and intimacy is a requirement. That's something that I really look for. But instead, here I was like, you know what? There's a lot of people that don't like it, so fuck it. I'm emotionally intense. And I take on the burden of what other people think because they are uncomfortable being as intimate as I am or whatever. This thing that I've internalized through all of my dating experiences where I'm trying to have an open, intimate conversation with someone and they're like huffing and puffing and pacing around my living room because they are so uncomfortable doing that with me. And I, over time, have taken it so fucking personally, and actually, it has nothing to do with me. I am not emotionally intense. We are just incompatible. We want different things. I am looking for a relationship with a certain level of depth and intimacy and closeness. And maybe you don't want that. Maybe you just want something more lighthearted and fun. You want a partner you can giggle with, and that's about it. You're not concerned about all the other things. I get it. People do that with their friends all the time. They want, party friends. They want people they can have fun and drink with. They don't really care about having friendship that is more intertwined and intimate and close. I understand. I know that there are people that don't want the same things. Why is it that for so long I have taken that difference and made it some fault of my own? And you know what? The more I sit and think about it, the more I'm like, it, of course it ties back to childhood. Oh my God. Feeling like I was too much. Like I was too emotional. Like I was too dramatic. Like there was something wrong with me. Like I was such a burden for having feelings. Oh my God. Of course it follows me forever. Oh my fuck. Like I wasn't consciously aware that these words, the way that I was speaking to myself, was more self-deprecating. I didn't see it like that. But this has been a subject that, because my therapist called me out on it and was like, so why are you talking about yourself like that? Why do you say you're emotionally intense? And through my conversation with her, I was like, huh. Okay, interesting that I do that. And I'm picking up now all these other ways that I've been doing it. And then I get on the call with the psychic and she was like, your guides want you to be more aware of the way that you're speaking to yourself, because you might not even be consciously aware of this, but you are a very powerful manifester and the way that you talk about yourself matters. So even if you're not consciously aware of it, or you think that it's maybe not that deep, it actually is. And you need to be very particular about the words that you're using, the ways that you're talking to about yourself. What did she actually say? I took notes. She said that I need to be working on observing the things around me, not judging the things around me. And I need to work on not taking things on or making other people's things about me, because it's not about me. It's about them. And I was like, that's literally what I've been talking to my therapist about how I will always take on other people's feelings, opinions, reactions, incompatibilities with me as being something wrong with me. I'm emotionally intense. I'm too much. I'm an acquired taste. I'm hard to love. Like I take it all on me if someone else is not compatible with me or aligned with me, or someone else isn't comfortable with the kind of depth or intimacy that I am. And I immediately, instead of just acknowledging that, because it feels mean to say that sometimes, because it is so important to me. But some people just aren't like that. Some people, they want to be easy breeze. Okay. They just want something easy and fun and lighthearted. They want party friends. They want someone they can giggle with. And that's fine. And I love that for them. And it actually isn't mean. It's just acknowledging our incompatibilities, our differences, whatever it is. We're looking for different things. That's fine. But it was interesting to sit there and have the advice that she's giving to me be literally the same advice that I am giving myself, that I'm talking about in therapy. There was more examples of this. I literally have like a pages long note of everything that I wrote down during the psychic stuff. So anyways, if you're interested in hearing more about the experience and some of the other things that she told me, the full psychic vlog breakdown is live over on my Patreon. Crazy stuff though. A lot happening. I have, and I've always said that for the week. And I fear this one could be extra polarizing. I'm actually scared to drop this one. But it needs to be said. Laboo-boos. Usually, I wouldn't have a take on this kind of stuff because I understand that it's just not for me. Right? But this week, I've been thinking about it because I, for the first time, bought a Sunny Angel. I went to the store to pick up a birthday gift for my friend. And before I was going to the birthday party, I was also getting lunch with another friend of mine. I know that both of them like Sunny Angels. So I got one for the birthday girl and I got another one for my friend who I was going to get brunch with just for fun. And then I was like, well, I want one too then. Like, I don't want to be left out. Like, I want to unbox something too. Never bought anything like this because I'm just generally, I'm not someone who likes a little useless trinket. Obviously, I love a little decor piece. I'm all into decorating my apartment and having my little things around. I'm not a minimalist by any means, okay? But these like random useless trinkets that are kind of ugly are not for me usually. But I was like, let me lean in. My friends like it. I'm not going to yuck someone else's yum. I'm here to have a good time. Let's get down. I'm getting everyone Sunny Angels. Let's unbox them together, people. So we go. I go get brunch with my friend. We do our little unboxing. I get the one that I didn't want. I got the peach Sunny Angel. And I was like, this bitch is ugly, okay? What a waste. And as I'm sitting there afterwards with my peach Sunny Angel just feeling completely deflated and disappointed, I'm like, okay, is this not just like gambling for tweens? Is that not what this is? Because the whole appeal is that it's like a mystery box and you don't know what you're gonna get, and people buy and buy and buy these shits, and it's like you're spending so much money on these little plushies or dolls or little trinkets, and you keep buying more of them because there's like a chance that you could get the one that you want. You could hit that. Like, you're playing slots basically, except there's no prospect of money on the other side. It is simply like another object that's going to take up space in your home. All of that to say, I learned once and for all that it's not for me. I will never be purchasing another one of these things ever again. It's not my vibe. If it's your vibe, I love that for you. This isn't even the take I wanted to share. I need to bring it back to Laboo-boos, but this is where it started, right? Been thinking about that. It's just not for me. The like plushy collectible toys, dolls, stuff. It's not my vibe. If it's your vibe, I love that for you. It's not the one that I'm on. I'm not going to yuck your yum though. But what I will say is this. If Laboo-boos would ever like to convert me to being a believer, okay? And they might really want me. They might really want to convert me specifically. Who knows? You might need me someday. I've been known to gamble. You could convince me. There's a part of my brain that could get excited about the mystery box of it all, right? I love slot machines. Famously, I'm very lucky as well, even though I did get the peach Sunny Angel, the only one that I didn't want. If Laboo-boos ever want to get me on board, they need to fix their fucking CVS receipt hanging out their butt cheeks. Stat. What the fuck is all that about? Listen, I can get behind a bag charm. You could convince me on that. Laboo-boos, though, look like an eyesore that immediately looks like a Happy Meal toy the second you notice that long ass tag coming from their butt, coming from the crack. What is happening? What is happening there? And I know that someone's going to be like, oh, just cut it off, which I'm sure other people would be like, that's sacrilegious. You're like, you know, defacing him by cutting off the tag. But that it is CVS receipt length level. The tag they have off the back and people are just clipping them to their bags. They're nice ass bags. And this thing literally, I'm pretty sure I did get something exactly like this in my Happy Meal when I was 4 years old in a McDonald's drive-thru after the doctors. Okay? I know. Driving home from the dentist, hit me with that four-piece chicken McNugget and a girl toy in the McDonald's drive-thru line. And they gave me this. I know they did. I know they gave me something exactly like this. And they had the fucking mile-long receipt attached to their ass as well. Listen, Labubu, you're going to have to do a big design overhaul if you're ever going to get me invested in this. It's ugly. It's ugly. You yourself, as a Labubu, you are cute. But that tag is crazy. That's crazy. Can we all agree? Can we all agree? Labubu lovers and Labubu indifferenters united, can we all agree that the tag is crazy? And it's the worst part. Everyone, hands in. Are we all together on this? Can we unite? Please. So that's that, okay? Labubus need to fix their CVS receipt crack before I pay them any attention. And I've always said that. And I've literally always said that. All right. Let's crack into some of these audience submissions. If you didn't know, there is an audience submission box for the show where every week I go through and pick out some questions, some advice requests, some am I the assholes, whatever is going on, you bring it to the sleepover and we will dissect and we will assess and we will deliver a verdict here on the show. Okay, so if you're interested in knowing what myself and Lover Girls Worldwide has to say, feel free to submit your inquiry to the box. Hey, Maddie, I'm hoping you have some advice about a weird situation I've got going on with my friend. Backstory is, I realized I might have feelings for him a few years ago, but the timing was always bad, and when I actually told him, it wasn't much better. We had a bit of an argument about it, and we were off for a few months, but now we're really close again and quite open about how much we love each other. Here's my issue, though. Over the past few months, I've found his texts really emotionally confusing. He's gotten into the habit of capping off sweet messages with a bunch of kissy face emojis like love you. Since I still have feelings for him, this has not been fun. Recently, he told me that I was gorgeous and ended it with a kiss emoji, which confused me so much because I had not sent anything that warranted that response. I was so overwhelmed and didn't know what to say, but decided to let him know that his flirting was kind of hurting my feelings. But his response was that he hadn't been flirting and he was just being nice. Oh, brother! I know that some people have this naturally flirty thing, but since he's aware of my feelings, I guess I expected him to try a bit harder not to lead me on. He's apologized and said he wouldn't do it again, but I guess that's not what I want. What I really want is for him to flirt with me and mean it. It's also even more confusing because the reason we argued in the first place was him rejecting me and then immediately turning around and kissing me, then inviting me over. So I feel like it's hard for me to believe there's nothing there. So I guess my question is, how do I get over these mixed messages that I keep receiving? I love him so much and don't want to lose our friendship at all, but I'm struggling to not be delusional about these moments of hope. How can I ignore all this stuff that keeps happening and just accept that I need to shut my feelings off and get over him? Dude, I feel for you so intensely. I've been in your shoes. I get it. It's fucking hard. Let's start here. You're not delusional. He is flirting with you. There is something happening there. And this is where it has to end. His texts are really emotionally confusing. And honestly, really inappropriate and mean. Once you've already had this conversation of like you saying you have feelings for him, him rejecting you and then continuing to be flirty, to tell you you're gorgeous and that he loves you with kissy emojis, to kiss you and invite you over. You're not crazy. He's fucking mean. That is mean. Of course his flirting is hurting your feelings. And for him to turn around and tell you that he hasn't been flirting, that he was just being nice, wrong. He was flirting. He was flirting. You are not crazy. Don't let him gaslight you. He was flirting with you. He's not going to call it flirting because that would be so fucking mean, blatantly, for him to be leaning in to this relationship fantasy while he has actively rejected you and knows that you have feelings for him. But it is fucking confusing, right? When someone's words and actions don't align, of course you are fucking confused. And of course you're sitting there like, well, it's not that I want things to stop. I like the flirting. It's fun. It's just confusing. Like, I enjoy this. I just want you to mean it. I just want you to commit to it. I want you to stand on it 10 toes down and say, yeah, I'm doing this. I'm treating you this way because I like you and want to be with you. I want you to look at me and tell me what you think of me because you're acting this way. And I'm like, okay, well, if I'm reading the vibes and I'm going off of how we are together, our dynamic, the flirting, how you make me feel, the way you speak to me and about me. Like, if I'm going off of that, I'm thinking that we are, you know, that something's cooking up here. So I'm not telling you to stop doing those things. I like those things because I like you. I'm just telling you to stand on fucking business, okay? It's not clocking to you that I'm standing on business, is it? I'm asking you to stand 10 toes down on the fact that you are flirting with me, that you do like me, that you do think that I am gorgeous and mean it. You want him to stand 10 toes down and just admit that yes, he is flirting with you. He is hitting on you. He does like you. What the fuck is all this? How could you treat me like this and have it be totally non-existent? I totally understand you. I have been you. I cannot express this enough. I have been you. It is hard to believe that there's nothing there. Totally. On the same page as you. And to be honest with you, I don't believe that there's nothing there. I don't think that you need to tell yourself that like what you are experiencing isn't actually happening. He is flirting with you. There is a flirtatious dynamic happening. It's not just him being nice. He is hitting on you. That is what's happening. Whether or not he wants to call it that is neither here nor there. This is not how friends treat each other. Hey, newsflash. This is not how friends talk to each other. This is not how friends treat each other. If he thinks the two of you are friends, he's hugely mistaken. You are not crazy. You are not delusional. And of course, you are confused. He is being very confusing. And I'm not into the whole putting your hands up and pretending you don't know what you're doing. I was just being nice. I was just whatever. You know exactly what you're doing and you're playing dumb to get away with it. So on to your question of how do you get over these mixed messages? How can you ignore all the stuff that keeps happening and just accept that I need to shut my feelings off and get over him? You need to put yourself first. And unfortunately, I think that requires confronting the fact that he is not being very kind to you right now. He knows that you like him. He has rejected you, but he is continuing to flirt with you and feed into this, you know, somewhere in between a friendship and a relationship type vibe that you guys have going on. He's putting his hands up and playing dumb about the whole thing. He's not dumb. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's enjoying a whole lot of emotional intimacy and closeness with you without any kind of label. Just a whole lot of flirting, a whole lot of emotional intimacy with absolutely nothing else going on. A celibituationship, if you will. Come on. We know much about those over on this corner of the internet. You need to put yourself first. And looking at yourself in this situation, being like, how can I stop feeling confused? How can I just shut off my feelings? How can I just, you know, be normal about these mixed messages and continue on so that we can just be best friends and nothing has to change? Like, something does have to change, unfortunately. It sucks that it got to this point, but it's like, nothing changes if nothing changes. And you can't just look inwards and find ways to suppress and cover up and mask while he behaves exactly the same. So long as he behaves like this, you are going to be fucking confused. And it's hard because you tried to have an honest conversation with him. You let him know that his flirting was hurting your feelings after you had already confessed that you had feelings for him and he rejected you while continuing on to be very flirty, to kiss you, to invite you over, to, you know, send you texts calling you gorgeous with kissy face emojis. Like, yeah, okay, you are having an honest conversation. He's not, though. He's not being honest with you. You guys are not having an honest, vulnerable exchange. You're being honest and vulnerable. He's just there. So if I were you, I would want to have a conversation where I call out what he's doing. And then I would suggest going no contact. Hard? Yes. And also, nothing is ever going to change while this is your current dynamic. If you are ever going to have a friendship, it will not be in these circumstances. Right now, this isn't a friendship. This is not how friends act with each other. I think that it would be awesome to have an open and honest conversation where you can both meet each other in that open and honest space. I don't know if he's willing to do that, though, since you've already tried multiple times and it doesn't sound like he's matched you in that way at all. And I get that your gut might want to just keep sitting in this place and suppressing how you feel and just finding ways to shut it all off so that you can be friends. But that's not really how your heart works, is it? I couldn't do that. And I think going no contact, as painful and difficult as it is to make that call in the first place and to go down that path, I think it does ultimately set the relationship up to have a potential in the future if you do decide to be friends later on at some point. I think the idea of going no contact is very intimidating, but I do think that it is helpful in like hard resetting relationship boundaries. These are our boundaries as friends. And also, like, if it's ever going to work, he has to be honest about his role in all of it. He can't just like put his hands up and say that he had no idea that he was flirting and he was just being nice. That's lame and also untrue. Like, it's just like, no, that's not what happened. That's not what's currently happening. Enough. I've had enough of this. I get you. I fucking hear you. This is a hard position to be in, particularly when he won't even admit that like there's something going on, because clearly there is. But unfortunately, it doesn't sound like he's going to be any different or things are going to change. And it doesn't sound like your feelings are going to change within these circumstances. So I think that the best path forward is probably to go no contact and to have some distance put between you guys. And if you choose to revisit a friendship later down the line that has more firm boundaries, awesome. But that also requires two people who are doing that internal work and reflection. If he refuses to meet you in the conversation honestly, then I don't even know how that could happen. So this is just mean. It is mean. And think about the fact that like you would never do this to someone else. Because why would you? If someone came to me and told me that they had feelings for me and I did not have feelings for them in return at all, there is zero fucking part of me that would try to kiss them, invite them over, text them, telling them that they're gorgeous with a bunch of kissy emojis and saying love you. We wouldn't do that. I would never fucking do that. Because not only is it confusing, but like if I didn't feel that way, why would I say that? It's confusing on their part and it's confusing on my part. Why am I acting this way? Of course, you're confused. He's also fucking confused. We're all fucking confused. If he can't be honest with himself, I don't know how the fuck he's going to be honest with you. Regardless, this is not about him. This is about you protecting your peace, protecting yourself, and making sure that the people close to you in your life are meeting a certain standard of respect and kindness. And right now, I don't think that he's meeting that. I think this is mean. This is just straight up mean. He loves flirting with you. He loves the attention. He loves having this emotionally intimate, whatever the fuck going on. Why would he want to put up boundaries when it feels so good? So you have to put up boundaries. You have to draw the line and say, this is done. This is not happening anymore. We're not doing this weird in the middle shit. You can't talk to me like that. You can't reject me and then continue on doing whatever the fuck this is. That's not happening. I need space. We're going no contact. That would be my suggestion to you. As hard as that is, I think that it is the thing that is going to be the kindest to you and give you the space that you need to actually process how you feel and start to move on. And maybe it opens the door to a more honest conversation, hopefully, so that maybe you actually can be friends later down the line. But you're not crazy. Clearly something is happening between the two of you, but I don't know what issues that he has that prevent him from showing up like a whole grown adult, but that's truly none of our business. You just have to worry about yourself and doing what you need to do to make yourself feel better and more comfortable. Hi, Maddie. Would love your insight on some recent interpersonal conflict. I hosted a potluck a month ago or so and personally reached out to people to invite them. On the day of, multiple people couldn't make it, but texted me to let me know. One of my friends, however, did not show up and did not notify me. I reached out after the event ended to check in, and she said that she needed a self-care day, which is totally valid. As I took time to reflect on it, however, I realized that her lack of communication did make me quite disappointed. I recently hung out with her in person for the first time since this occurred and brought it up. She told me that she was actively having a mental breakdown at the time and was disappointed that I wasn't understanding. She also noted that she felt like it wasn't as pressing to communicate her absence because it was a group gathering. I told her I was understanding about having mental breakdowns. I myself am no stranger to them, but really value communication. There are exceptions, of course, but I feel like sending a text is possible in most circumstances, even when you're going through it. I've used my own mental health struggles in the past as excuses, so it can be challenging for me to hear other people doing the same. Again, there are, of course, exceptions, but I've had so many recent relationships having this theme of patchy communication. She told me that this is to be expected in adulthood, but that saddens me. I do wonder if I'm expecting too much. She also concluded that we have completely different communication styles. I'd love your thoughts on this situation. There's been a lot of recent discourse about how relationships slash community take work, and it's not always the most convenient. How do we balance this truth with having grace with people? When are we giving too much grace and letting go of reasonable standards in relationships? I love this question. I mean, hate this situation, love this question. My perspective on all of this is like, there can always be room for human error, right? Sometimes we make a bad call. Sometimes we make a choice and it hurts someone else's feelings unintentionally. And then we learn that, and we can give people context for why we made that choice, but ultimately we should still apologize. This is where the difference comes in for me. So obviously I hold the belief that if someone invites you to something, as someone who plans, if someone invites you to something and you can't go, whether it be last minute or in advance, whatever, you should tell them. You should RSVP no. You should say, hey, sorry, I can't make it. Even if you're going to bail on me 30 minutes before, I would rate you telling me that versus just not telling me that because you think it's a group event and I'm not even going to notice that you're there. If I invited you, it's because I wanted you there. If you can't make it for whatever reason, I'm not going to hold that against you. People need to take mental health days. Sometimes you're having a bad day and you're just not feeling very social. You don't want to come. Whatever it is, by all means, I'm never going to be mad at you about that. I just want you to tell me. To not tell me, I think, is just kind of inconsiderate and rude to the person that is planning whatever is going on. And it doesn't feel nice because I invited you because I like you and you're my friend, and you don't even have the decency to tell me that you aren't gonna show up. It doesn't feel good. It's not nice. So I'm always going to be in the camp of, if you aren't gonna come, if you can't make it, if your plans change, if you're having a bad day and you just can't get out of bed, fine. You need to tell your friend that, though. Communicate it. I can have room for grace in, you know, if one of my friends, I'm never going to assume ill intent. So I would have done the same thing that you did. The next time I see this person in real life, just the two of us, I would have brought up that it did hurt my feelings that they didn't let me know that they weren't going to come and they just sort of ghosted me the day of. I think how the person reacts in that situation is really the make or break moment. I have so much empathy for someone needing a mental health day, for having something pop up, and maybe in that moment they chose not to communicate for whatever reason. If that person just looks at me and goes, you know what? That makes a lot of sense that your feelings were hurt by that. I'm really sorry. I was having a really challenging mental health day and I figured it wouldn't matter because it was a group event and there was going to be a ton of other people there. So I didn't text you. I didn't reach out and say anything because honestly, even texting anyone at all was feeling really overwhelming that day. And I dropped the ball. I didn't text you. I totally should have. I'm really sorry about that. I hope you can understand. I was just having a really bad day. If my friend said that to me, I'd be like, absolutely, dude. Like, thank you for understanding why I was hurt. Thank you for like hearing me. And also, I totally understand that like sometimes when you're having a really bad day, using your phone at all feels really overwhelming, especially if you're like, you know, bailing on something and you're worried that I'm going to be mad about that. But like, just so you know, I would never be mad. And I totally understand. And like, you don't have to be nervous about disappointing me if something like this comes up in the future. And we have this beautiful moment of connection where it's like, I told you that I felt hurt. You received that. You apologized. You explained to me, gave me additional context that allowed me to not take this so personally. I gave you some affirmation as well of like the kind of friendship that we have and the kind of openness that you can feel with me. And now we can move forward and we can actually be so much closer because of this point of conflict. The thing where it gets hard is like if you go to your friend and you say, hey, it really hurt my feelings that you didn't, that you just like bailed on this event without saying anything to me. And they immediately are like, oh, well, I didn't go because I was having a bad mental health day and like there's nothing I can do about that. So, and they don't apologize and they get defensive and they use their mental health as an excuse rather than like additional context to add light and color to the situation. It's fine to be honest about it and tell the truth, but to use it as a reason for why you're not sorry or that you didn't have to think about your friend, that to me is where it becomes wrong. Because even within a mental health crisis, you should care about being a good friend to your friends. That's just kind of, yeah, you should be able to care about multiple things at once. It shouldn't just be like, it's either I'm thinking about myself or I'm thinking about my friends. I think we can do both at the same time. And there's so much room to make mistakes. Again, if you just go into that conversation and you say, you know what, I dropped the ball. I totally should have texted you. I was just feeling super overwhelmed and bogged down that day and I figured it wouldn't matter, so I chose not to. And yeah, I'm sorry. I should have said no. I should have told you that I wasn't going to be able to make it. Suddenly it's like, oh, okay. I saw you, you saw me, we have this mutual understanding, we can move on and be totally fine. But if you as a friend are going to your friend and being like, hey, this hurt my feelings, and they're not going to listen to you or hear you at all, and they're just going to be like, well, actually, I was entitled to treating you that way because I was having a bad day. No, that's not how that works. Relationships and community building does take work, and we should have grace for people. But that grace doesn't mean that people should just get off scot-free or that because we have grace for someone, they don't need to have their own reflections or like acknowledge your hurt. Like we can look at the situation and be like, it hurt my feelings, but ultimately it's totally fine. We're going to be able to move past this. And I understand. I have understanding for you. I'm not going to look at you and be like, oh, you're such a bad person for not texting me when you were having a mental breakdown. I'm going to have grace for your situation. And also I'm going to let you know that it did hurt my feelings. There can be both things happening at the same time. I don't think having grace for people, for other people, requires us to like self-abandon in some way. That apology doesn't necessarily make my hurt go away. You know, my feelings were still hurt in the moment, but it's knowing that my friend saw me, that we heard each other, that we met each other at the same place, that they heard me out and I heard them out, and we're able to both have understanding for each other and move forward. That's the part that matters. That is having grace for each other, you know? And I can also have grace for the fact that sometimes shit gets fucking messy. And sometimes your first conversation does not go the way that you hoped that it would go. And maybe someone does have the immediate response of being defensive. And maybe you just need a little bit of time to pass, to simmer down, to be in different mental headspaces where you can both look at it. And maybe then they could have a more, you know, a less defensive conversation with you about it. I don't know if she was defensive. Like, I can't, from what you said, it seems like maybe she was more defensive, but I can't really tell what the vibe of this discussion was. So you take your own assessment of, you know, how this conversation went. And we can have grace if you feel that it didn't go that well either. You know, we can choose which things we're willing to let go of and be like, you know what? I love this person. They're clearly having a hard time. I made my feelings known. I was open and honest about how I felt. We're just going to leave it. This isn't a big deal. I'm going to move on from it. Or if it is a bigger deal to you and your feelings are really hurt and this is like really bothering you, I can't, you know, obviously we hope for the first case scenario where you have this conversation and you both hear each other out and everything goes beautifully and wonderfully and whatever. But sometimes people do get defensive and it doesn't go that well. And sometimes you will choose to just be like, and you know what? Ultimately, it's not that big of a deal. And I love this person so much. This is not worth fighting with them about. I actually don't have the energy to do this. So you know what? Whatever. I'm just going to sincerely let go of it. And if you do sincerely let go of it, then I think it's fine. But if you're just going to choke it down and let it, you know, build up resentment over time, then that's no good. So maybe it requires a second conversation once more time passes and you can revisit it from like a different perspective. Good to have grace for people, good to have grace for yourself, but we don't have to self-abandon in the process of giving other people grace. And with that, I'm going to head on over to the post show. There has been so much happening on the internet over the last week between the Coldplay cheating scandal to this bizarre Jubilee video with all those fucking racists, Trisha Paytas's baby, the Chris Hughes and JoJo Siwa shit. I've got so much to talk about in terms of pop culture, internet news, things that are going on, as well as a couple of controversial question mark TikToks that I have been mulling over. So if you would like to jump in on all the fun there, we're going to continue this over on the Patreon. Would love to see you guys over there. And if not, I will see you next week at the sleepover. Mwah.